pack it up. This is over. This is over.
Wow.
This is over.
You don't have the guts. I'm disappointed.
I don't have the guts. Jimmy doesn't have a knee, and Tyler Herro's got a groin issue, all right?
That's what Wes Goldberg said on Locked On Heat today. I'm very glad to be joined by Wes to talk about it. And I know this might be a cruel place to start, but you said it. So let's just jump right into it. Who are you favoring in the NBA Finals if the matchup is Warriors Celtics?
What a place to start. I don't know, man. Like my brain says the Celtics because just how well they can guard the Warriors, how they can come around those screens, how they can sort of blockade the paint from any of the penetration stuff that they want to do. I just think that the Celtics are one of the few teams in the league that can actually guard the Warriors. And I think if Tatum has a good series, like he could score right there probably with Steph, right? Like I think that's certainly possible. I guess you could put Andrew Wiggins on Tatum, but you know, I don't know that the Celtics are totally fearful of that matchup. But then again, like my heart is like, well, it's Steph Curry and it's the Warriors and it's Draymond Green and who knows? So that's my answer.
Yeah, I land in a similar place. I think the Warriors experience matters, but maybe not quite as much as, I think to a level you've seen the Warriors do it. So there can be a trust there.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get more into the Heat. Don't worry. I haven't been, the Celtics have looked very good in the series. I think a lot of these Eastern Conference Finals is more so the Heat falling apart. At the end, not having enough gas to get there, struggling. You know, we'll talk about the reasons. Then the Celtics just shutting them down. I think the Warriors have more in the tank. I don't think they've really found their peak form. I think they're still up and down. And I'm curious when they get this bigger challenge in the Celtics. I think the Celtics will be the best team they face by a good margin. How it would rise to the occasion. Go ahead.
No, I think that's a really good point. You know, not to discredit anything that the Warriors have done so far, but you know, they've gotten a pretty good break on the way to the finals here. Ja Morant getting hurt when he did, you know, I thought the Grizzlies really could have pushed them in that series. They never had to play a Grizzlies team with Ja Morant and Steven Adams. And maybe some people roll their eyes at even mentioning Steven Adams, but he was a problem for them, you know, when he was in that series. So, and then obviously, you know, Phoenix implodes and you get a Dallas team that just suddenly can't shoot threes anymore, and credit Golden State's defense a little bit for that. But I came away from these conference finals pretty convinced that if the Heat were healthy, I think they could have pushed Boston. I still don't know. I think I probably would have had Heat in seven had the Heat stayed healthy. But, you know, even bigger picture, I think the best two teams remaining, again, all things equal, all teams healthy, I thought the best two teams left were both in the Eastern Conference in these final four. Just based on what we've seen, I just think those were the two best defensive teams in the league in Boston and Miami. And the level that Jimmy Butler was playing at before this knee inflammation, I don't think that there's anybody in the postseason playing better. So it's unfortunate that injuries sort of sucked us from a really fun competitive series, but that seems to be what happened.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree that these were the best two teams. I'm a big believer in the Warriors, how good they are when they're using their top players. But I do agree with you on Jimmy Butler. He was having, until he got hurt, the best postseason. No offense to Luka Doncic or... I'm not even sure how else you would say. I think it was Jimmy Butler by a clear margin, but he did get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. I don't see how that gets better for Game 6. I don't see the Heat winning Game 6. And even if they did, I'd probably favor the Celtics in Game 7, barring Miami winning because some Celtics got hurt or something wild like that. Even in Miami, I think the Celtics have been the better team than the Heat for months. They're definitely the healthier team. It's not to say the Celtics are perfectly healthy, but they're definitely the healthier team right now. And then Game 6 in Boston, clear advantage to the Celtics. Let's talk briefly about how we got to this point in this series. What did you see from the Heat that gave you such confidence? Because the Celtics were favored in this series. But before it became clear that the Heat were going to have so much injury trouble, we knew Kyle Lowry had some issues, but we didn't know the extent of what everything was going to be. Why were you so high on the Heat?
Well, going into the series, I thought the Celtics were the better team by a substantial enough margin that, you know, I thought they were going to win the series. And then I watched the first two games. And even from me, somebody who covers the Heat around the team, watched every game, I just didn't expect this level from Jimmy Butler, you know, after watching him in the regular season. I thought that the Heat's path to the finals was, all right, Jimmy Butler, go out there, play the other team's star, you know, to a draw. And, you know, the 3-point shooting has to, you know, stay what it was in the regular season, which was the best 3-point shooting team by percentage, and just phenomenal defense from Bam Adebayo, and then Eric Spoelstra just having the coaching advantage in every series. I thought that was, if the Heat were going to get to the finals, that was going to be the path. A few of those things didn't happen, right? Like the Heat's 3-point shooting completely fell off a cliff, but Jimmy Butler didn't just play the other team's stars to a draw. He outplayed every single star that he came in contact with in every single series, and he was doing that, I thought, in the first couple games in the Celtics series. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, you know what? Jimmy Butler is that dude. And we got to stop pretending that he's not. And he's a player, maybe not in the regular season. He's probably not one of the top five players in the NBA or something, you know, whatever franchise type of 1A superstar. But in the playoffs, he just seems to turn into that guy. And I'm tired of trying to figure it out and explain it. And I'm just going to acknowledge that it's happening. And it's not the first time that this has happened. And so that's what gave me the confidence after the first couple games in this series was, all right, like, I think both of these defenses are pretty evenly matched. Boston's a little banged up. Miami's a little banged up. That was certainly a factor. But Jimmy Butler is just, he's good enough. And he's so impactful on every single possession, which I don't think any other star, like, basically left in the playoffs could have said that, right? Like, you could say whatever you want about Luka and Steph and even Tatum. Like, they're not affecting every single possession the way that Jimmy Butler is when he's out on their court and he's healthy. But then, of course, the knee inflammation flared up and drained him of, you know, these superhero powers that he was putting on display there. But that's kind of what led me to think that this series could be competitive. Going into it, I thought the Celtics were going to win the series after the first couple games. I felt a lot more confident in Miami, but that was obviously before the injuries.
Yeah, defense is what separates Jimmy Butler there from Steph Curry. Because Steph Curry, with his gravity as a shooter, with his movement off the ball, offensively, I think people underrate how much he's affecting every single possession.
Absolutely.
So much. But defensively, yeah, doesn't hold a candle to Butler. So that's where you can go with that. I share your excitement about the Heat's upside. I've been a believer in how good the Heat have been through the regular season. I wasn't super high on them in the playoffs, I think maybe similarly to you. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a really good team that always had a fighting chance. However, Jimmy Butler is 32 years old and has a lot of mileage on him and is breaking down in the playoffs again. Kyle Lowry is 36, breaking down in the playoffs. Do you have optimism going forward in this group? Or I'm afraid that there's too good of a chance that this was Miami's last, you know, best chance.
Yeah, it's a tough time to ask that question, right? Because it doesn't look very good. If anybody's optimistic right now, like, credit to you. You're might be the most optimistic person alive. But it's a good point, and I'm not that worried about Jimmy Butler. Obviously, you have to consider his age, and that's a big consideration if you're Pat Riley and you're trying to build a championship during this window, during Jimmy Butler's window, that is. And Kyle Lowry, that acquisition was a big part of that. But this isn't just the playoffs, man. Like, when this is over, we're going to look back at Lowry's year in Miami, and you have to be a little disappointed, not just because he missed a bunch of games, but, like, the scoring numbers weren't there. And all season long, they were telling us, hey, Kyle, he's a champion. He's a veteran. He's basically giving us the impression, don't worry, when the postseason comes around, he's going to take it up a notch, right? The way that we saw that last year in Toronto in 2019 and all these things. That did not happen. His numbers got worse in the playoffs. And yeah, he was dealing with the hamstring issue and all these things. But, you know, the numbers are the numbers. The facts are the facts. Kyle Lowry got worse. And Kyle Lowry was not the player that they needed in these playoffs. And he is getting older. And some of that's built in. Like, you can't just write off injuries as some dumb lunk. Like, this is what happens when players get older. They get hurt, right? Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul, you know, this is what happens. So I do think it's a concern. And especially, Dan, when you consider that they traded Goran Dragic and Precious Achiuwa, a nice young player, for Kyle Lowry. And we saw, like, you know, the Nets got swept in the first round, but not because of Goran Dragic. It wasn't his fault. He was one of the few Brooklyn Nets players who showed up. Like, I have a really hard time thinking that Goran Dragic would have went 0-6. Now, that's not to make some sort of I'm not trying to go back and play, like, revisionist history on this trade or whatever, but, like, they could have used a guy who could score like Goran Dragic, especially considering that Tyler Hero was dealing with this groin thing. They could have used another big like Precious Achiuwa, because Dwayne Dedman got played out of this series, right? So I'm not trying to do shoulda, woulda, coulda, but it's these are just when Kyle Lowry plays like this and you gave up what you gave up to get him, you can't help but be a little disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I'm not sure Dragic would have put up the same production if asked to do as much as Lowry is being asked to do. It helped to be in Brooklyn, being in a complimentary role. I don't think Precious Achiuwa at this age was going to be the answer. I think he's just a little too haphazard in his play. Dedmon obviously wasn't the answer either.
No.
And the concern with Lowry, 2 years left on his contract, making $28 million next year, almost $30 million the year after that. Jimmy Butler has this long-term extension. You know, the Heat always seem to find a way to make it work, but they might be headed toward being backed into a corner with these expensive contracts and players. I'm as big of a believer in Jimmy Butler as anybody in his mm-hmm. ability. I called him a superstar. God, it was when he was still with the Bulls. I mean, however many years ago that was. He's older. He's got a lot of mileage. I am concerned about him going forward, although I said that a few years ago, and he's continued to defy expectations and play even better. If he's healthy, I definitely believe him. I'm just not sure he can get all the way through. And, you know, as we've seen with the Warriors, I think they've benefited from having these couple of years of not going through the playoff gauntlet.
Right.
Jimmy Butler just went through it, and the result is a loss in the conference finals. And you can feel however you want about that result. You can feel good about that if you want. I probably would. I'd probably encourage Heat fans to say, you know, this is a heck of a season. You're one of the final four teams. You were the best team in the East in the regular season. Great record. You should feel good about that. I'm not sure everybody feels that way. I think a lot of times, especially in Miami, given the prior results, and a title's the expectation, at least NBA Finals. And so if you don't feel good about it, now you put Jimmy Butler through all these stresses on his body and came up short. And it's,
yeah.
You know, you're going to ask him to do it again next year? You know, or is it going to be an every other year thing? I mean, we saw him lead the team to the finals and then was not good to go last year, you know, getting swept in the first round. Is next year going to be an off year, and then 2 years, and now he's even older, but we're going to hope that's when he can do it. Like, how do you time that up?
It is the fundamental question kind of confronting this Heat team, and one that I've been trying to figure out too. I mean, look, I think you've probably got what, maybe two more years of Jimmy, like optimistically two more years of Jimmy Butler being this good. Like, you know, you're going to have to enter a period where you're resting him a whole lot in the regular season. You're probably cutting back his minutes, but you get Jimmy Butler at his peak powers in the playoffs, and you hope that he can last more than three rounds as opposed to this season. So that's probably the strategy. With Lowry, you got to go into this offseason and be like, dude, you got to get into literally the best shape of your life. Like, bring back skinny Lowry, all this stuff. Like, you need to get into the best shape that you've ever been in, like Miami Heat shape, all this stuff. Like, that's your only hope with Lowry, because I do think that when he's at his best, his basketball IQ, the hit-ahead passes, the defense that he could provide, like all that stuff is really, really valuable. And it's what this Heat team needs, especially at the point of attack and at that point guard spot that frees up Jimmy and Bam to be more scorers. Like, at his best, he's really exactly what this team needs. They just need him to be at his best more often and for longer into the playoffs. But, you know, there's kind of two timelines happening right now. You've got the Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker timeline / Pat Riley timeline, if we're being real. And then you've got the Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero window, which is, you know, more into the future, right? Like, Bam, he's still young. I think that there's flashes of him being a dominant type of player. He's not, I wouldn't call him dominant just yet. Defensively, probably dominant, but not on both ends right now. Offensively, he looks too passive at times. But you could see him veering in that direction, maybe developing into that level of player. And Tyler Hero, really rough playoffs for him while he's dealing with this groin thing. But I'm still really encouraged by what I saw in the regular season. I'm not going to be too reactionary about an injured Tyler Hero in the playoffs. I think that guy could be a starter and a high-level scorer in the NBA. But if you're the Heat, you really have to ask yourself which window you're prioritizing. Is it the one that's immediate in front of you, circled around Jimmy Butler? Or is it the one that's pushed a little bit into the future that is more sort of the Bam Adebayo window, right? And I think the Heat want to do both. They want to have their cake and eat it too. They kind of want to do what the Warriors are doing right now, where you're competing for a championship and you're still like developing the Jordan Pools and the Kamingas and the Moody's and all this stuff. But I don't know that the Heat have that level of high-level talent. I don't know that they can quite get there, especially in an Eastern Conference that's really loaded with Milwaukee coming back, with Chris Middleton and Giannis, with Boston being what they are. We'll see what happens with the Brooklyn Nets. But it's going to be really tough. It's not to say that they can't do it. I don't really know what the other options are. I think you just sort of have to, you know, I never want to count Pat Riley out for being creative, but it kind of feels like you have to ride out this Jimmy Butler timeline and hope that the baton is passed to the Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero timeline smoothly, and that one of those guys could take a leap substantial enough that keeps Miami in that title conversation.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Why isn't Bam Adebayo more of a factor on this timeline, on the Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry timeline? You mentioned the Warriors, and I do not like their plan. I think if you have a chance to win a championship, you've got to really go in to pursue it. But I think
I'm with you on that.
You mentioned a player who I don't think fits that. Jordan Poole is a really good player right now. He is helping the Warriors right now. No problem, right? It's good to have helpful young players. You don't necessarily need to trade a young player for an older player when he's already helping you.
Right.
That's not Jonathan Kuminga. That's not Moses Moody. That's not James Wiseman. Those guys are not ready to help much in the playoffs on this level. And those were the guys I would have looked to trade. Poole is different. To me, why is Bam Adebayo not different? He's already been an all-star. You know, he was excellent a couple games ago. Why is he not delivering performances like that more often? And I am not somebody who's saying, oh, to be a star, you have to score. There are plenty of stars who contribute in other ways. Kyle Lowry at his peak was not a big-time scorer, but he was a legitimate star based on what he contributed on the court. And Bam Adebayo can be that, but he's also a lot better when he's aggressive offensively, when the ball is running through him more offensively, when he's attacking to score and to pass. You know, I don't know what happened to his passing. That was a more prominent part of his game a couple of years ago, and that's when he was at his best. Why is Bam Adebayo not a bigger factor in this present timeline?
Well, defensively, he is, right? I think, you know, at his peak, there's only one defender in the league better than Bam, and that's probably Draymond Green, right, if we're talking about absolute ceilings. Offensively, it's a conundrum because on one hand, the Heat need him to be aggressive and score. You want him to just go. Like, take the ball in transition, do a Giannis impression, because he could do it, right? Like, he could just take the ball in transition, long strides to the basket, Euro step, finish at the rim. Like, we've seen that a bunch of times, and we've seen flashes like in Game 3 of Bam just being absolutely dominant offensively. The problem is that they do ask him to do so much offensively. And on a night like in Game 4, Game 5, where just Lowry doesn't have it going, Jimmy Butler doesn't have it going, like, they ask him to do a lot of facilitating. And now you're basically asking Bam to do both. It's like, hey, get a bunch of guys involved, but also score all the time. And I think that's a really tough position for Bam to be in. And we've sort of seen his role kind of fluctuate in that way, right? Like, the idea of bringing in Kyle Lowry was so that Bam could be more of a scorer, right? And that's why you saw the assist numbers drop off this season as opposed to in seasons past, is because he was put in, you know, low post situations. Hey, go score, go in the mid range, get to that jab step, go ahead to that push shot in the middle of the lane there that you like. And that was sort of the idea, was to sort of elevate Bam's scoring this season. Unfortunately, right now they haven't been able to do that because, you know, the guys around him have been so limited by injuries. I think the Heat have to ask themselves what they want of Bam. You know, I do think that they're probably asking him to do a little bit too many different things offensively. And, you know, not everybody could be Nikola Jokic and just do it all the time, right? Especially, you know, it is Jimmy Butler's offense. It's Jimmy Butler's team. Like, the ball is going to go through him most of the time anyway. So it's not like Bam has the ball in his hands all the time. So when he does get the ball in his hands, it just feels like sometimes he's being pulled in two different directions, if that makes sense. And even for him, it's like, hey, Do I want to try to get guys involved with the dribble handoffs, whether it be Max Strus or Duncan Robinson or whoever? Do I want to, you know, be setting up screens for Jimmy Butler in a pick and roll and getting Jimmy downhill? Or do I want to just take this ball and go for it myself? This isn't a unique problem. Like, this is a problem that a lot of NBA players and a lot of high-level stars deal with. But I think for a guy like Bam Adebayo, who's still young, still sort of coming into his own in this role, I think it's something that he needs to figure out. Again, to use the Jokic comparison, like, Jokic had to figure this out, what, 3-4 years ago probably? People were asking, hey, why aren't you putting up 25 points every night? You know, and eventually something clicked and he figured it out. That switch probably needs to flip for Bam at some point. I don't know when it'll be. And I think the Heat could do him a favor by sort of kind of structuring his role, defining his role a little bit better and telling him, all right, you know, going into the season, we want you to be a 25 point per game scorer, or we would rather you be like 18, 10 and 7 every night. You know, I think they need to figure out what they want from him.
Well, I think at his best, Bam showed that he could have the ball and read the defense to make these decisions of what to do. That he can have the balls in the high post, and maybe it turns into a dribble handoff, or maybe it turns into him attacking, but he could do both and threaten the defense that way. That didn't have to be I'm in passer mode or I'm in scoring mode. And I think Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry could fit very well around that.
Yeah,
those are two guys who don't need to pound the air out of the ball. They can work off the ball. They can make quick decisions once they get it. They can keep the ball moving. To me, a lot of the – not always, right? This is going to run him down too much given his defensive responsibilities. But far more often than happens – and I don't know if this is Bam or the Heat not making Bam do this. But I think a lot more of the offense could run through him. That doesn't mean he's going to become the leading scorer. That doesn't mean Jimmy Butler is going to take a backseat to him. But literally just putting the ball through Bam more often – I think would benefit the Heat. And I'm wondering why that's not happening.
Yeah.
And I hear you on Bam needing to take that next step. Jokic is a great example. He was way too passive as a scorer for a while. LeBron was too passive as a scorer for a while. Like, this is a natural evolution of a young player. But Bam was an all-star 2 years ago. He was better last year. He's on a team that's making another deep playoff run. Like, I think it's fair to ask more of him now and, you know, not just be super patient with him.
No, for the record, I mean, he took 15 shots last night in 38 minutes on a night where Jimmy Butler was limited. And some of those were late, right? No, I'm saying he needs to take more. Like, he needs, yeah. Like, that should have easily been 20, easily. And, like, even Jimmy Butler, as limited as he clearly was, took 18 shots, took three more than Bam, and he was hurt, right? He's playing on one leg. Like, Bam Adebayo, there are moments in games where Bam Adebayo absolutely needs to be like, you know what? I'm just this dude now. Because it was clear that last night Jimmy and Kyle were not those dudes for the Heat. So at that point, Bam's got to be like, you know what? I'm not going to be the facilitator anymore. I'm not going to try to set these guys up because they just don't have it. That's the more of the thing that you need from Bam. You're right. It's not a black and white kind of binary thing. It's not like, hey, passer mode or scoring mode. It's just recognizing those pockets in games, those moments, those high stakes moments in games that could flip a game, right? Like those inflection points, those are the moments in the games where Bam has to take over. It doesn't have to be high usage, 48 minutes, you know, a game. It just needs to be like, all right, this is my moment to step up. You're absolutely right when it comes to that. They need that more often from Bam. And by the way, like, Udonis Haslem has talked to him about this. This has been a pretty open thing. Like, Haslam's sort of in the guy that's in his ear saying, hey, this is your takeover minute, right? Like, you're an all-star. You've got the contract. You're this team's superstar opposite Jimmy Butler. You need to take over in these minutes. You need to see more of that from Bam.
Do you have a sense why it hasn't happened yet? Like, I look at Jokic, I look at LeBron. I think their playing styles were very naturally unselfish to the point they just felt like, hey, I got to get my teammates involved. That's the right way to play. And ignoring that to help your team win, you have such an ability to put the ball in the basket yourself that you are hurting your team when you're not prioritizing that. Of course, you can still pass, should absolutely still be part of your game. For their positions, two of the best passers ever. Jokic is a center, LeBron is a forward ever. But they're also supremely talented scorers. Is Bam similar, where just mentality wise he feels like passing is the right thing, or do you have a sense of why this hasn't clicked yet?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was trying to get at before. I think there is a natural unselfishness to Bam's game. And by the way, you could say the same thing about Jimmy Butler. Like, how many times have we seen Jimmy just like pass up a wide open layup and just kick out for a three pointer or something else? Like, I think there is a level of unselfishness on this team that it veers on the side of too much, you know, pretty often, I would say. And I think Bam is just a part of that. And again, when you're asked to do so many things, I think one of the hardest things, and it's an underrated thing in the NBA, is to know, when do I get guys involved and when do I be selfish and just get my own shot? And I think the two guys who come to mind who I think have been best at that over like the last decade are probably LeBron and Steph. Like, they just know when to get guys involved and they know, okay, it's my moment, let me take over. And not to say that Bam needs to be LeBron or Steph, but it just goes to show you how hard that meant, how hard striking that balance is when you are such a great passer and playmaker and a really talented scorer and athlete the way that Bam is. Like, I think Bam, there is such a higher ceiling to what he could do from a scoring perspective, but I do think that mentally he's pulled in just too many directions. And that's sort of what I was trying to get at before, is because the Heat are also asking him to do a whole lot on offense. I think it would be easier if they just said, hey, go out and just score and let the assists sort of follow from that. But I think, you know, as a hub of offense, there's a lot of different responsibilities, a lot of different things on his plate that he's probably just having a little bit of trouble with right now.
If you'll allow me to psychoanalyze Jimmy Butler for a moment.
Let's do it.
In this unselfish. I'm not sure if that's exactly how I would describe it. I think Jimmy Butler takes pride in controlling the game without scoring. That is
yes.
a challenge to him. And the perfect example is that practice with the Timberwolves, right? Where he barely scored but led the reserves over the starters. Like, I don't think that's unselfish. And maybe it's in certain ways selfish. That he wants to be the guy who can put his fingerprints all over the game without scoring because he knows basketball. He is that good at basketball. That it's not just about shooting the ball through the hoop, that he can control every facet of the game without necessarily needing to score. And obviously, as we've seen in these playoffs and other playoffs, he's a heck of a scorer too when he puts his mind to that.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree with you. Like, there are obviously times where you're just like, hey, man, like with Jimmy, like sometimes just take the game over. Take that layup. Take that dunk. Don't just pass it out. But that kind of goes back to like what we were saying before, is like Jimmy is that unique superstar who still really does impact the game on both ends on every single possession. And I just, not to make this like, is Jimmy Butler the superstar type of debate? But, you know, I know he obviously doesn't take threes at a high clip. He's not like the superstar that we're used to seeing these days that are such big scorers and dominate from the perimeter and things. Like, even LeBron changes his game to be more perimeter oriented, in part because that's what a superstar is supposed to be these days. And obviously threes are helpful. I'm not saying that they're not, but Jimmy Butler, he's kind of a throwback superstar that is dominant on defense. He's as good of a wing defender as there is. Offensively, he could still get you a bunch of points. He controls the game, to your point. Like, he gets guys involved. He just knows what's going on every single possession. He's so smart. He works so hard. And he is one of the few players in this league that makes his presence felt on every single possession. He is a superstar in the margins of the game, but he also gets, you know, the box score stuff. He averages a lot of points and rebounds and assists and steals and all these things too. Jimmy Butler is that guy. I don't know how much longer he'll be that guy, but right now he is.
As long as we're down the rabbit hole of psychoanalyzing Jimmy Butler. And I hope this comes across. I'm real fascinated by the Heat, where they go and how they've conducted themselves as a franchise, continuously pursuing short-term winning and doing it, right? I think most teams, when they have such short-term goals, tend to fail. Mm-hmm. The Heat have done such a great job of identifying, developing players, attracting players. Some of this is the Miami market, just putting everything together. And we can use the word culture. I don't mind saying Heat culture. It's true. This is real with this franchise. And so I'm fascinated by how this team has been built, how this team is going to continue to build, however the rest of this series goes. So a big flashing question mark around all of this, though, is this late season blow up with Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra. And maybe it was nothing. Maybe it was something, but everybody saw it. And when the Heat signed Jimmy Butler, my first thought was, okay, he finally found a place that will embrace him for who he is, because he wears out his welcomes. He wore out his welcome in Chicago, wore out his welcome in Minnesota, wore out his welcome in Philadelphia to a lot of people. There were also a lot of people in all those places who loved him, who wanted to keep him, who wanted him to be there. But he rubs some people the wrong ways, not for everybody. I'm a big fan of how he carries himself. But not everybody has that same thought. What did you make of the Butler-Spoelstra blow-up?
Oh, it was something. I mean, that was the inflection point of the season. It could have been a major inflection point for this franchise, right? Because that could have went the other way. But there were not a lot of teams that could have sustained that sideline public blow-up the way that it was and then basically lose a couple more games, but then get back home, recoup, and go on a six-game win streak, secure the number one seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs, right? There's not a lot of teams, I would say most NBA teams, that late in the season, that public of a display with their superstar and their head coach, that could have ruined, that could have just, they would have crumbled under that, right? Like their season would have just been over at that point. Not for the Heat. They seem to somehow rally after that. And I think it's just like this weird sickness that this franchise has that they find these things and they're just like, yeah, that's what we're all about. Like they weirdly like get off on it. And it's just like, I don't know. That's the best I can explain it. But I'll say it wasn't just because they were getting blown out by Golden State in that game. Like that was weeks of sort of tension building up with how they were playing and the direction of the team and just some things. Like Jimmy Butler's a hard guy to work with, right? Like he's a tough personality. He's a unique personality. He demands a lot from his teammates, from his coaches, from the organization. He does. But those and the Heat will tell you, and I believe that they really do believe it. They would rather have that guy than not have that guy. They would rather have that guy than sort of the passive superstar who's just cool with everybody underperforming. Like that's the thing that they do appreciate about Jimmy Butler is he does hold people accountable. He does it in his unique way, but ultimately that's what he's doing. And I think everybody understands that it's coming from a good place. He can rub guys the wrong way. He can rub Eric Spoelstra the wrong way. And he did. And that's a big part of why that happened. But I think Spoelstra is secured enough in his job too, right? I mean, the longest tenured coach outside of Greg Popovich in the NBA, he's secure enough in his own job. And Jimmy Butler is secure enough in his abilities and his standing also in the organization as the superstar for this franchise that they can, like, they almost have a freedom to just yell at each other on the sideline, right? So, you know, I think there were tension there, but I think it wasn't necessarily bad. It wasn't tension that could break what this organization was trying to build. If anything, they kind of rallied afterwards. I'm not that concerned about it going forward. I just think that this is how Jimmy is. And by the way, this is how Eric Spoelstra is too. Like, he'll fight Jimmy Butler. I think he would. You know, he's crazy. So that's just the way that these guys are.
You know, what was the line? I think Brian Windhorst had the quote, like, he's like,
"Oh, you are really crazy." Or, "I always knew you were crazy." Yeah, that's so good.
What was that? Oh, wow, there's somebody as crazy as me. Like, I thought I could be the only one. I don't know. It was, it's interesting you say you're not concerned about it going forward. Because to me, the Heat knew what they were getting at Jimmy Butler and mm-hmm. like you said, embrace that. So, what was the surprise here? Like, what could have happened where Spoelstra is taken aback? That Jimmy Butler is so crazy. Like, of course Jimmy Butler's crazy. What's the
surprise? The surprise was that it happened when it did, where it did, on the sideline, right? And you know, they kept saying stuff. And look, obviously they were trying to deflect and minimize the situation afterwards. They're like, "You should just see us in practice. Like, this happens all the time. This is no big deal." And I was like, "Well, you don't yell fire in an airport for a reason. Like, you know, like there's just certain things that you can't do in public that you could do in private." Right.
And everybody knows that. And so if you let it,
right,
that shows how significant this was.
Yeah, you knew there were cameras there. This wasn't news to you that your NBA game was being televised. Right. So, I think what surprised Eric Spoelstra was that not that Jimmy Butler yelled and did all these things and challenged Eric Spoelstra to allegedly a fight, but that he did it there in that moment on the sideline during an NBA game. I think that's what surprised Eric Spoelstra because they probably have had it out a little bit in practice. Like, I believe him when they say that, like they yell, I've been there after practices when media get let in. And by the time media walks into the practice floor, they're still yelling at each other. Like, we've seen it. Like, PJ Tucker and Bam Adebayo and Udonis Haslem are just screaming at each other in the corner of the practice court. And you're like, "Oh, okay. Just another day in Miami." But to let it happen, to let it kind of spill over into a basketball game in the middle of a game, that I think is what was surprising. And I don't think even Spo ever anticipated that happening. I thought that they believed Jimmy Butler to be a little bit more professional is probably not the right word, but just a little, you know, not that crazy, I guess.
Discreet.
A little bit more discreet. Good word. I think that they were expecting that. And the fact that Jimmy Butler was like, "Do you want to fight?" I think that was probably also surprising to Eric Spoelstra.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One other key player that I want to dig a little deeper into is Tyler Hero. Runaway winner for sixth man of the year. I got 96 out of 100 votes. I think a lot of people listening to this who are Heat fans could probably already know this. There were only the four voters who didn't vote for him were Chris Fedor, Rick Bucher, Kevin Arnovitz, and Kevin Pelton. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Kevin Pelton briefly about this, and he took a little flack for not having Hero on top of his ballot. And I said, well, look, I can fly on the red. I have a vote, but I would have had Hero number one, but also like not nearly as overwhelmingly as everybody else, but nobody notices that, right? That if you're like, eh, this guy's barely number one, but it's still number one, that gets accepted. But here are my doubts about Tyler Hero. I just think, let me start with the positive. I do think that scoring is the premium skill in the NBA. If you can create and make your own shots, that is so valuable, and that is what Hero is best at. But otherwise, just a lot of limitations. Limitations defensively, limitations as a passer. Not overly efficient, but efficient enough for his high volume. But he's very young and can grow into maybe a better player. I remember this time last year where Heat fans were debating, well, would you trade Tyler Hero for James Harden? Mm-hmm. Interesting look back on that debate. Where are you? How are you feeling about Tyler Hero as a long-term building block now?
Well, number one, this is probably the most expensive groin injury in the history of the NBA, right? I mean, he's probably lost, several million dollars a year because he's up for this extension this summer. Yeah, I think so. I think he's probably lost a little bit of money. We don't know.
If you're Tyler Hero, are you accepting less than a max extension?
I don't know. That's a great question. That's a really good question.
Because
I have no idea.
It's not as if this is the last opportunity, right? It's just right. The extension, and then you go into a restricted free agency the next summer if you don't reach an extension. So I hear you on the groin injury is maybe, yeah. I'm not even sure. Well, I don't mean to cut you off. You tell me, why do you think this is going to hurt so much? I mean, to me, this is, a blip, and he's in his early 20s, and you got the next 4 or 5 years ahead of him. What does this groin injury matter?
I'm with you. I agree with you 100%. I just think that the way the NBA works, it's like, what have you done with me lately? And if you're the Heat, you can kind of use an underwhelming playoffs at the negotiation table. But you might be right. Like, I don't know. Tyler might just be like, well, cool. If you're not giving me the max extension, we'll just kick this can down the road for another year. Or he might just take whatever he wants. Like, he just had a kid. Maybe he's just looking for more financial stability. And he's just like, whatever it is, if it's slightly under the max, I'll take it. It's fine. I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend to know what Tyler Hero wants to do. But No, I do agree that this is just a blip. I'm not concerned with Tyler Hero after these playoffs. I was really encouraged by what I saw during the regular season. He took a very meaningful leap this year. And it wasn't just because of more of an opportunity as sixth man. And it wasn't even just the fact that he had a more of a defined role than he had last year, although certainly that helped. But he got better. He was a more skilled basketball player than he ever has been. Like, his footwork is impeccable. His handle is incredible. He has gotten better as a passer, though there's still a long way to go there, but he has shown meaningful growth, which is encouraging. Like, okay, we know that you can get better at this skill. Like, you're not just a one-trick pony and you are getting better at this skill. And so I am still really, really high on Tyler Hero's ceiling. I think that he could potentially be one of the better scorers in the NBA. Like, I think he could have we're talking about ceiling here. I think he could be somewhere like where Bradley Beal is. I think that that's where he could get to. I'm not saying he will, but I think that's where he can get to. And if that's the case, then, man, you got a really good player to pair up with a guy like Bam Adebayo in the future. I love his long-term outlook. I think the work ethic is there. I think and I wrote about this. I did a feature on him for the Miami Herald early this year. And, one of the things that really pops out about him is just his curiosity level, where he watches so much film, and he'll watch film on guys like Steph and Chris Paul and Bradley Beal and Kobe and Kawhi and all these guys, and like study their footwork. He studies like Steph Curry's like relocation stuff. Like, he really wants to be that level of player. And I think that his priorities are in the right place. And I think that he can get there, but there are definitely limitations, right? Like, athletically, he's not the best athlete. Like, he's like, the passing thing is an issue, and teams can trap him and sort of limit him the way that we saw Philadelphia do in that second round series. Like, there's things that he needs to get better at. I just bet on him getting better at them. You know, I do believe in that. And for all the things that people knock about, like even the wingspan and the athleticism and all that stuff, like, he does have really high level basketball feel. And I don't think that's something you can teach either. And I think that's probably one of his best skills. And just the freelancing nature, the do-it-yourself shot creation that he adds to this egalitarian offense that we talked so much about earlier, that's also a needed dose. That's a needed thing for what they do, and why I thought he was very deserving of Sixth Man of the Year. It wasn't just yay points, you know? It was needed points. It was like really important buckets that he was getting. It wasn't just, you know, scoring 20 points a game. They needed those points in those moments. He was like the timely bucket getter of the season for the Heat on a team that everybody's like questioned, like, their half court offense, and rightly so. Like, they have an average half court offense at best. Like, he was the guy that helped them. So it wasn't just the points. It was the way he got those points. It was the bailout shots constantly. Like, if you watch the Heat games, like, he made a tremendous impact. And I thought that's why he was pretty clearly the Sixth Man of the Year. And it's why I'm so high on his future.
Yeah. Because the Heat are the Heat and Miami is Miami, this team is always going to get linked to other stars. Bradley, mm-hmm. Donovan Mitchell has been linked to Miami. To me, Tyler Hero would be the obvious trade piece if ever of those actually happen. What do you think of the vibe? What would you think of doing that? Mm-hmm. You know, Tyler Hero is younger mm-hmm. and still developing, and those guys are more established at level they are. Beal more so than Mitchell, I think. And what do you think is the possibility of that happening? Is that just pie in the sky, or do you think that the Heat can find a way to get another star? I was going to say to put with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and Kyle Lowry, but probably should not include Kyle Lowry in that to get a third star.
Yeah, I guess it matters from like a salary matching reason, but we'll see. I think what could go down as maybe the most underrated trade from this last deadline was Miami trading KZ Akpala, little known KZ Akpala, to Oklahoma City to free up another first round pick that they could trade. That could end up being a really big deal. And when they made that deal, it was relatively early on the before the trade deadline. And a lot of people sort of telegraphed that, as me included, being like, oh, this is the first of like a two move thing before the deadline. Like, they're going to free up this draft pick and they're going to make a move before the deadline. But they just free up the draft pick, and then that was it. They were pretty much quiet. They basically stopped trying to make moves after that. And now they have that pick going forward. And so I do think that there's an aware, and look, it might have just been an opportunity. Hey, we can move KZ Akpala, get this pick, like, let's just do it, and then we'll just figure it out. They might have not had something specific in mind, and that's very much possible. But this is a Heat front office that is very purposeful in what they do. And I do think that they will be open to making a superstar move, just like they always have been. And that could include Tyler Hero. My thing is this. If you're basically going to put all the chips on the table, right? If you're going to just go all in, and that means all the draft picks that you can trade within from now to the next 7 years, all your draft picks that you're able to trade, Tyler Hero, and name whatever salary. If you're going to just take all of your trade stuff and put it into one star, you better be really confident that that star player you are getting back makes you the favorite, I think, in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I think that's like, because there's an opportunity cost that comes with it. We're in an NBA now where a new superstar comes available seemingly every summer, and maybe even more often than that at this point, that I don't think that you need to just sell the farm right now just for the sake of getting better. I think if you do it, you have to be really confident that you're probably one of the best two teams in the Eastern Conference. And I don't know who that star is, and that's not really my job to figure out. But like, even like, I had this debate yesterday with somebody, like the Donovan Mitchell thing. And a lot of Heat fans would love to have Donovan Mitchell. I'm a big fan of Donovan Mitchell. I really am. I don't know that if you add Donovan Mitchell to this team, even with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, if you're able to keep that three together, is that team better than Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks? Is that team better than the ascending Boston Celtics? Is that team better than whatever the Brooklyn Nets come back with? I don't know. I don't feel great about that. Like, I'm not really confident that even at that point that the Heat are one of the best three teams in the Eastern Conference. And so is that worth the opportunity cost? Is that – because when you move all those pieces, you're basically saying, okay, this is our core going forward. It's Donovan Mitchell, it's Bam Adebayo, and it's however much longer we have of Jimmy Butler. And you're gonna, you have to be really confident. Like, that team could be in the Eastern Conference Finals every single year. I have no doubt about that. Can it win a championship? I don't know. That I have real questions about. So if I'm the Heat and I'm making a move for a star, then I have to be really confident that this significantly increases our chances of winning a championship.
I love the implicit 76ers shade throughout this part of the conversation. Yeah, they traded for a star and gave up a lot. And no, it did not make them one of the better teams in the East. Well, one of the better teams or one of the best teams? No. And given James Harden's age, I'm not sure they're going to get there. When you listed all the teams that you're worried about in the East, I didn't hear Philadelphia come up. I noticed that. Getting Donovan Mitchell, it would be fantastic for the Heat. I think your bar is higher than mine would be. It would make the Heat better. And when you have Jimmy Butler still in his prime, and you said maybe only a couple more years, and that's probably a realistic timeline, I think you just got to go for it and can't just worry about, well, the Bucks might be better. The Nets might be better. The Celtics might be better. They might. They might. It might not work out. But I think if you don't take that risk, you're always going to be – I mean, what do you think the Heat were in the East this season? I'd say they were probably – I know they had the best record. And I respect that. I think they were probably, if everything's healthy, everybody's healthy, I think they were probably the third best team in the East. I don't think they were as good as Milwaukee. But they had a chance to beat those teams. And if you add Donovan Mitchell, wherever you land in the pecking order, you'd have a better chance to beat those teams. I've been disappointed in Donovan Mitchell the last year or two. He's slipped so much defensively. He could be a little bit on that end. I mean, he just lets guys go by him. Now he's a matador. And I think the Heat culture, using that word again, would bring out the best in him. He's the
shot. You'd be betting on that, yeah.
Yeah, he's the shot creator Miami could use. More developed in that role than Tyler Hero. Older, more expensive, of course. And he has the tools defensively to be better, so you would hope that being with the Heat, they would get that out of him and put him in position to succeed and just be a better team, right? Would they be guaranteed to be favorites to win these? No, but they'd be more strongly in the mix with the teams you mentioned.
Yeah, and to your point, like, this was the sort of series where you could use a guy like Donovan Mitchell. This is why, like, Joel Embiid tweets that the Heat need another star.
Yeah.
Right? Now we're talking, right? That's an MVP candidate. Like, that now you add Joel Embiid to Jimmy Butler. It would be great to see those two guys on the court together at some point. You know, like, it just seems like they would be a great fit. I think on a game in a series, this is why you get multiple stars. This is why Joel Embiid tweets something like Miami needs another star, is because when one is limited by injury or unavailable even due to injury, that's why you acquire that other star, is because that star could potentially still carry you to a series win. And the Heat clearly didn't have that. Jimmy Butler, knee inflammation, title chance is gone, period, done. And they didn't have that second guy to step up. Now, also, Tyler Hero wasn't available. Well, we might have been able to see that Tyler, if Tyler wasn't dealing with this groin injury, maybe he does have that breakout. Maybe he does score 37 points in the Eastern Conference Finals again. You know what I mean? And maybe we're not even having this conversation. But I could be talked into Donovan Mitchell very easily. Like I said, I'm a big Donovan Mitchell fan. Like, if we start having a debate about this, I'll end up on the side of just trade for Donovan Mitchell, okay? I'm just like, I just keep trying to pull back a little bit and look at all the things that happen in the NBA and what this team's ultimate goals are. And I can't help but wonder if maybe there's even a better option. But then again, maybe that's a little bit pie in the sky. You can't really control what stars come available and what stars want to play for you. And if the fact of the matter is that Donovan Mitchell comes available and he wants to play for Miami next year, then yeah, if you're the Heat, you do have a really hard time not doing that. And I do agree with you. It makes them better. And maybe that is somebody that can be that other shot creator that this Heat team so desperately needs.
I do agree with you 100% that having another star gets you so much more margin for error. I think back to the 2019 finals when Kevin Durant got hurt for the Warriors, and a lot of people said, see, this is why instead of just adding another star, they should have added more depth. I'm like, are you kidding? Like, the only reason the Warriors are still in this series and competing with the Raptors is because they had multiple stars. You have Steph Curry, you have Kevin Durant. Any other team, one of them gets hurt, that's it. Look at the
right.
One of them gets hurt, it's done. Of course you get another star if you can. But here's where I'm going to correct you. Joel Embiid did not tweet that because of that point. He tweeted that because he wanted attention.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that Joel Embiid was thinking about like the macro level of team structures and franchise directions. I do think that Joel Embiid was like, hey, I'm on Twitter. Let me get some attention here and just have some fun. How do you feel about that? I mean, first of all, like it's perfect. He literally calls himself Troll Embiid on Twitter. So, you know, on brand.
Yeah, sometimes I think he's trying a little too hard, right?
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler is much more my style, where it's a little more subtle. You know, the way you were talking or not talking about the 76ers, a little more my style. Gotta be a little more subtle sometimes.
Just a sideline blow up every once in a while. Get it all out of your system, and that's it.
Yes. You know, an occasional Tobias Harris over me, you know, everyone knows a little bit more than Joel Embiid, you know, just tries a little too hard sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy knew those cameras were there too. There was people like, oh, did he even know? I'm like, of course he knew. He literally waited until he turned around that corner in the tunnel to scream that. So that was great. Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Butler always knows where the cameras are.
He's nothing but not direct.
And I love this term. I'm gonna use this. You said earlier in the podcast, the Heat's weird sickness. I think that covers. I think that covers what they're dealing with right now. And I think that is very fitting of where they are as a franchise. I always enjoy talking about Miami. Next time you come on, we're gonna just talk 76ers. I think that'd be even spicier.
Perfect.
Wes, thanks a ton for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man.